We're holding the top of page 22 in Yuvamis, near the beginning of Oiskofvav. Learning various things about good wives and not such good wives and Shalom Bayis or lack thereof. So the Gemara continues on the subject. Amar Rava, Isha Ra Mitzvah Lagarsha. A bad wife of the kind that we were talking about yesterday, where she insults and curses and whatever her husband, Mitzvah Lagarsha, it's a mitzvah to divorce her. Shenema, Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Gorish Leitz V'Yetzin Modern, Gorish Leitz, throw out, expel the Leitz, the scoffer, as we talked about yesterday. Marsha explains that when she acts in the way that we talked about yesterday, where she prepares him food, but then she curses him out or whatever, then this is, and these are examples of Letzonus, of not taking things seriously the way they're supposed to be. So then she's a letz. The yetzei modern, let the arguments go away. The yishbos din v'kolayin, and the judgments and the embarrassment will stop. So in other words, when you have somebody who acts like that, they're like a letz, then better to divorce and not have the trouble anymore. Ion Yaakov points out that this would apply even, usually we say Ishto Rishona, we have the famous thing, a man divorces his first wife and even Mizbeach cries for him, but nevertheless Rava is saying that in this case that may have to be done. As we talked about yesterday, really depends also, are we talking about that the fault is entirely hers, or are we talking about that the husband, usually of course, when there's a lot of times when there's problems, then it's from both sides. But anyway, the Omar Rava, also Rava says in this connection, Isha Rok, Sabasa Maruba, when he has a bad wife, but also she has a very large ksuba and he can't afford to pay it off, Sarasa Bitsida. Then what you should do is have a tsara near her. In other words, Robert's suggestion is marry another wife. And that way, that will make her realize that she better shape up. Tosfos points out, at the end of the parak, Rava himself points out that a man is allowed to marry many wives without needing permission from his first wife. We have Cherem Devein Gershom eventually, that was hundreds of years later, even among the Sfardim, it eventually became common, even though in general in their original lands they didn't accept Cherem Devein Gershom, it actually became common in those lands that when a man got married they would write a clause into the Ksuba saying that he's pledging to not take another wife without his first wife's permission. But here Rava is talking about before you had any of these takanas. The Amri Inchi, and Rava says, like people say, Bechavata v'lo besilta. A woman may be more willing to accept rebuke or to realize by comparison that she's not being so good from another woman, v'lo besilta, rather than with a thorn. So like, in other words, you would think, you pricked with a thorn, it's going to make you wait, I should stop doing this. But Rava is saying that having another woman who either will tell her or will show her in word or in deed how she's not acting properly, or that she herself will realize that now I'm losing my status in the household or whatever. So that itself may help her shape up. Mimiri actually says doesn't necessarily mean actually go and marry another wife. Means basically make her think you're going to. And that alone, the fear of that. The Gemara elsewhere has an expression, Eina ishin eskana ela b'yerech chaverta. A woman is jealous with the thigh of a fellow woman, meaning in other words, when she realizes that she's going to have to compete for her husband's affection and his tashmish and whatever with another wife, then that itself may cause her to act differently. V'omar Rava, also Rava says in this connection, Kosha Isha Rok Yem Sagrir. A bad wife is as difficult for her husband as a stormy day. Rashi is Sagrir, it comes from a Loshan Apostle. I was going to quote now, it's a Loshan Sogar, like closed up. Like it's the kind of day when you have to stay closed up indoors because the weather is hard to go out in. Rashi describes, for example, a day of hail and wind. So an Isha Ra is as bad as that. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Delach Toded B'Yom Sagrir, a constant dripping, like when you have a leak in the roof and then you have a constant dripping in your house on a stormy day. The Ashes Medonim and a quarrelsome wife, Nishtava, are the same thing. So in other words, Shlomo HaMelech is comparing that they're comparable one to another. The point being, Marsha says, it's not so much that you would think without Rava telling, what do you need Rava to tell you? I mean, how you can read the pasuk yourself. The answer is without Rava telling you, you would think the comparison is to an annoying leak. But Rava is saying, no, the comparison is really to the stormy day. You can't go outside on a day like that. The weather's too bad. So the same way, a husband in this situation, he's stuck and he can't easily get out of this situation.
He can stay inside and fix the leak.
He can stay inside and fix the leak. But the point is, well, usually you have to go outside. You have to go up onto the roof to fix it. But the point is, the comparison is not so much to the leak. The comparison is to the stormy weather that prevents you from going out. In the same way, he's stuck in this situation and he can't easily get out of it. Also there's the point, the Maharal makes the point also, like, usually when you have stormy weather like that, it also usually makes people feel more depressed. The person feels usually more lighthearted and tolerant and whatever when it's a sunny day. And then on the other hand, when you have a stormy day like that, less so, in the same way an Isha Ra has such an effect on her husband's mentality and on his feelings and so forth. I once saw actually a Gleich Vertel on it. Also, somebody said, I don't remember who, that the point of the pasuk is also, so maybe the comparison is to the leak. The point is, a leak only bothers you on a rainy day. When it's a sunny day, the leak's not a problem. As opposed to an Eishes Medonim, the Shtava, it's always equal, it's always the same thing, no matter what the weather is.
Yes,
V'amar Rava, Boi Re Kama Toiva Isha Toiva. Rava also says, come see how good, what a bracha it is from Hashem to have a good wife, become a Ra Isha Ra, and vice versa, how bad it is to have a bad wife. Kama Toiva Isha Toiva, Dichtiv, as you have the passage that we quoted several times in the Gemara yesterday, Motza Isha Motza Toiva. A man has found a wife, he's found good. And in particular, now, that doesn't necessarily say that she's an Isha Tova. Marashah points out at the end of the pasuk, Vayofek Rotzen MeHashem, where he brings out favor from Hashem, meaning that it shows that Hashem has favored him. That clearly shows we're talking about an Isha Tova. We also learned yesterday, Vayofek also is Meloshin Poikikin, that his Averis are sealed up and hidden away. So, and the pasuk is saying, so you have to consider, says Rava, what is the pasuk referring to? You can say on one level that many, many psukim in Mishlei are meant to be understood on two or more levels. That's why it's called Mishlei, which means like a mushel. So you have the surface meaning of the pasuk, and then you delve below the surface and you find that it's talking about something else. So here, if you take the pasuk on its surface meaning that it's talking about a good wife, well then you can see kama tova isha tova shakos b'shabcha. Well then see how good a good wife is that the pasuk praises her. And Iba Torah Mishtoikra, you can instead understand that the pasuk is referring to Torah. We actually have today's Tanya, where halachas and Torah are compared to Eishes Chayil. And you have many other places. The whole Eishes Chayil that we say Friday night is also one of the many meanings of it, is it's a metaphor for the Torah. So the Torah is often compared to a wife. So if you're going to say that Rava says, if you're going to go below the surface and you're going to say that the Isha, that Motza Isha of the Pasuk is referring to a person who learns Torah, well then, Kama Tova, Isha Tova, well then look how good a good wife is, Shat Torah Nim Shalaba, that she can be used as a mushal for the Torah. And the point is, in other words, Maharshal says that the idea is supposed to be, the Rambam mentions that a person when he's learning Torah should be so into it, like the Rambam describes, like you have a person who's in love with a woman, and like he can't think of anything else, like all his thoughts are constantly of her. That's the way it should be with a Yid in Torah. Now, on the other hand, Kama Ra Isha Ra, look how bad a bad wife is, Rava continues. Dichtiv, the pasuk that we quoted before, Umoitzani Mar Mimavas Isha, that Shlomo also says, I found even more bitter than death is a wife, and the pasuk continues to describe, we're talking about a wife who causes trouble. And Maharshal, by the way, earlier points out the first time the Gemara brought this pasuk that in the simple sense, in context of the pasuk in Kehelas, it's talking about an Eishes Ish who seduces a man into being mezana with her. But nevertheless, the Gemara is understanding. But then the question is, why would that be more Marmi Mavis more than any other? There's 20 or so Arayas, so an Eishes Ish is only one of them. So therefore, the Gemara prefers to understand it about an Isha Ra who makes life so difficult for her husband that he wishes he was dead. So again, Iba Gava Mishtoikra, if you're going to say the Pasuk is talking about, on the surface meaning, it's talking about a woman like that, about a wife like that, then the point is, Kama Ra, Isha Ra, Shakosa Magana. Then look how bad it is that the Pasuk takes the time to condemn her. Iba Gehenim Mishtoikra, you could also say instead, looking at it on a deeper level, that the Pasuk is hinting at Gehenim, that a person might end up in if he follows his Yetzihara. Then the point is, Kama Ra, Isha Ra, Shegehenim Nimshalaba, well then come see how bad a bad wife is, that Gehenim can be compared to her. So, and Maharshal explains, in other words, then the point is that, so you would say that death brings about the physical death as the death of the body, but here we're talking about the Pasuk maybe hinting at Gehenim, which is where the Neshama dies, and therefore in that sense it's worse, it's Marami Mavis, even more bitter than death. There is also the point, there is also the point, by the way, the Gemara mentions, there's a Gemara in Eruvin that mentions that when a man suffers from an Isha Ra, he's not going to end up seeing Gehenim. So therefore, that also fits with this over here that we're saying, that the Isha Ra herself can be compared to Gehenim, and therefore he's experienced it during his lifetime, and therefore he doesn't need it after 120. In this connection, the Gemara brings a pasuk. The Navi Yirmiyah says about the Jewish people, "Hinani mevi elehem ra." Behold, I am going to bring on them an evil asher lo yuchlu lotzes mimena, that they will not be able to go out of it. So, in the simple sense, it's talking about that Hashem is going to bring against them Nebuchadnezzar, and he's going to conquer them, and they're going to be stuck and not going to be able to get out of Golus. But the Gemara is also seeing it as hinting at this problem of an Isha Ra. Amar of Nachman, Amar Rav Bavur, Zu Isha Ra, Ksubas Meruba. Again, when he has a bad wife and she has a large ksuba, and therefore he can't eat, and therefore he can't afford to divorce her, then that's a Ra that he can't get out of. So Maharshal explains the comparison is the same way as you have, for example, the Nebuchadnezzar and the other enemies of the Jewish people are dominating over us, and we have no ability to get out from under their control. The same way it is with a guy who has an Isha Ra and she lords it over him. We mentioned the other day, for example, briefly, we mentioned Rabbi Yossi Aglili, where it's mentioned in Medrash that he had that kind of situation. He had an Isha Ra, and the upshot of it was there was a large ksuba, and he couldn't afford it. The Medrash describes how Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah helped him out, because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, as we know from many Gemaras, was extremely rich, so he was able to help out Rabbi Yossi Aglili with that. By the way, when we said at the top of the Omud, Isha Ra, Mitzvah Legarsha, so what about? We had several examples yesterday of Chachamim. We had Rav Chiya, we had Rav, according to one way of looking at it, we had Rav Yehuda, who had wives that were difficult to get along with, and yet they didn't divorce them. Why not? So there's a couple of explanations. One explanation is, in those cases, they had children with their wife. That's different. When Rav is saying Isha Ra, Mitzvah Legarsha, he doesn't necessarily mean when there were children involved. Another answer is that in each of those cases, yes, they were an Isha Ra, but they also had some redeeming qualities. In the case of Rabbi Yehuda's wife, we said that she got angry very easily, but she also calmed down very easily. And the same thing with Rav's and Rabbi's respective wives. They weren't always so great to them, but they had certain good qualities. When Rava is saying Isha Ra, Mitzvah Legarsha, we're talking about where there's no good qualities at all. And even then, you know, you can always go see if some marriage counseling might do some good. All right. The pasuk, another pasuk in this connection, talking about troubles that we can't easily get out of. Pasuk in Eicha says, "Nesamnani Hashem bidei le'uchal kum." Hashem has placed me into the hands, into the power of someone where I can't even get up. So again, to get out of the trouble. Amr of Chista, Amr Ma'ukva, Barchia, same thing. Zu Isha Ra, Ksubas Meruba, same thing. That pasuk is also hinting at the situation of a man who's married to an Isha Ra with a large ksuba, where therefore not only he's placed into the hands, he's placed under the control of somebody where he can't get up and get out of it, because he can't divorce her, because he can't afford to pay off her ksuba. Amr of Chista, B'ma Rava Amri, in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, they gave a different explanation. Amri, they said, Zeshem is a noise of Tzlurin B'kaspoi. Another meaning of that pasuk, Nasanani Hashem B'delei Uchakum, it's not just, again, each of these psukim, this and the previous pasuk, Hinni Mevi Elei Ra, in the simple sense, they're talking about on the national level, the Jewish people, but here we're explaining that it also can refer in the individual level to what happens to an individual. So in the Ma Rava, in the West, in Eretz Yisrael, they explain that means it has another meaning as well. Well, when you have a person whose money, whose food depends on his money. Meaning, we've been learning here and there the last couple of days that on the one hand, it's not so great for a person to be engaged in farming as his whole parnasa. On the other hand, a person should have a small plot of land where he can grow food for his family. So now we're saying if he doesn't have that, if he has to depend on buying food in the store, then you never know. Prices may go up. Or there may be shortages or whatever, and therefore he's constantly nervous. Therefore, Nesamnani Hashem bidei le'uchakum, Hashem has placed me such a person in a situation where he can't get out of it because he may always be in trouble if there's a problem with the food supply or with the prices or whatever. Maybe he has a different explanation. He has a slightly different dearest over here. He explains it means a person who earns money, but he doesn't invest any of it. If he invests some of it, then at least he has, or he'll be earning money from that. But if he's just earning basically just enough to make ends meet, then that's a problem, because then he has he's not enlarging. He doesn't have the ability to enlarge his assets, and that's what the Gemara is referring to over here. Elsewhere, by the way, the Gemara mentions other psukim in that connection. Also, there's a Gemara, I think, in Menachos and maybe in other places as well, that mentions that also you have psukim in the Teuchacha, near the end of the Teuchacha, in Parshas Kisavai, that also refer to this kind of thing, a person who doesn't have a field to grow his own grain, so he has to buy it wholesale or retail, or even worst of all, he doesn't have even the ability to buy that, and he actually has to buy bread from the baker, where in all those cases, his life is in constant suspense, because all you need is something goes wrong with the supply chain, and he goes hungry. All right, continuing on this topic, the Gemara continues, you know, Yischof Zayin. Here's a pasuk from the Torah in this connection. The Torah warns, the part of the Torah, your sons and your daughters will be given over to another nation. So now, in a simple sense, it means exactly that. That, in other words, there are going to be goyim that are going to be conquering and then taking Jewish children captive. But Marshall points out in earlier psukim it mentions the word la'ivecha to your enemies. So why all of a sudden there's a change over here to la'am acher? So therefore, the Gemara says, Omar of Chonan bar Rava, Omar Rav, Zu Eishes Ha'av. This refers to when a father of children has to remarry because his first wife died or he divorced her, and then she as a stepmother to the children is not always so good to them. So it's not an enemy per se, but nevertheless, it's Am Acher of a family, of a mother who comes from a different family. Marsha points out, we find the word Am being used, for example, of the individual Shvatin. So Am Acher can mean a different family. Iyun Yaakov also points out that there's a Gemara in Shabbos that says Noshim Am Bifnei Atzman, hey, women relative to men are like a separate nation, because you think about it, you know, all of us know men and women have very different ways of thinking and then doing things or whatever, so it's almost like you meet somebody from a foreign nation. So in that sense, then the Eishes Ha'av, the stepmother over here, can be called Am Acher in the pasuk. Another one, here's another pasuk in this connection. This is from Parshas Hazinu. The pasuk says, Hashem warns, Begoy novel ach isen. I'm going to anger them, and I'm going to cause the Jewish people to be angered and upset by a novel nation. Novel means degenerate or low class or whatever. So what does that mean? So here we have several explanations. So first, Amar of Chonan bar Rava, Amar Rav, again, Zu Isha Ro'o Ksubas Meruba. This is yet another pasuk referring to the bad wife with the large ksuba. So therefore, so it's novel in the sense that, as we said before, she curses out her husband, so she uses nivul peh against him. So therefore she can be called begoy novel. And again, the point is that achisem, Hashem is saying the husband is going to be angered by her in the sense that he has to put up with it because he's not able to divorce her because he can't afford to pay her ksuba. Now here we have several other explanations. Rabbi Lozer Omer Eloat Tzedukin. Rabbi Lozer has another meaning of begoy novel achisem. Who is this goy novel? Refers to the tzedukin. This is actually, the word tzedukin is actually a change by the censor. It's really supposed to be haminim. And minim includes various, I mean, Zukim, we know, famously didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. Minim includes various people who don't believe in certain fundamentals of Yiddishkeit that Amam classifies among the 13 Midas, among the 13 Ikrim of Yiddishkeit that Amam formulated. You have a few of them where if a person denies them, he's called a min, and a few other ones where if he denies them, he's called an apikurdus, etc. So a min includes, for example, somebody who doesn't believe in Hashem at all, or who believes that there are two gods, or that Hashem has a body, and several other categories like that. Minim also often in the Gemara often includes also the early Christians who had ideas like that. So now Rabbi Lozer is saying that the goy novel of our pasuk is referring to those kinds of people. Because again, novel, Moloshim Nibol Peh, they're speaking in a derogatory way against Hashem. They're speaking and claiming false things about what Hashem is.
When was the Talmud finished?
The Talmud Bavli was finished around the year 4260 on the Jewish calendar, which is 500 CE. So yeah, by that time, Christianity already existed for a couple hundred years. I mean, here we're talking about Lazar, who lived a few hundred years before that, but yeah, in his times already, it wasn't yet the official religion of the Roman Empire, but by that time, you had a fair number of people who were already following it. Yeah. So Bachin Hoimer, as the Pasuk says, Oma novel believer, Aina the Kim, the novel, the degenerate person, says in his heart, there's no God, so therefore, so that refers to these minim who have such mistaken ideas about Hashem. The Masnisatana, in a Braisa we learn the Goy novel of the Pasuk refers to yet another group. Elu Anshe Barbaria of Anshe Mastanai or Martinai, it refers to the people of Barbaria and Martinai. These are places in North Africa. Barbaria, you have there's parts of North Africa are called the Barbary Coast, named after that, and then Mauritania was the Romans had named an area which is more or less nowadays parts of Morocco. They called it Mauritania. So those Bapashtos are the two places that the Gemara is referring to over here. Shemahalchanad Rumin Bashuk, the people of those places walk around naked or underdressed in the marketplace. There's nobody more disgusting and abhorrent to Hashem more than somebody who does that. Because then that way, they're not even acting like a human being. They're acting more like an animal. In fact, you have. If a person does that, then he's posel la'edus. Tosfos elsewhere, the Gemara brings that in Kiddushin, I think. Tosfos points out, doesn't mean where the guy's walking around stark naked. I mean, then he's a shoyter, he's posel la'edus on that ground. It means, let's say, for example, you know, sometimes you have people are doing hard work in the street and they do it shirtless or whatever. We're talking about people like that, where they're severely underdressed, but that's it's a bizoyan for themselves, the way that they're, even a human being, even a goy, should have a certain self-respect and a certain dignity to wear clothes in public, and these people aren't doing that. So that's another meaning of the goy novel. He's saying that Hashem is saying that I'm going to cause the Jewish people to be harassed by such low, degenerate people like that. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Elu Chavraya. Rabbi Yochanan says yet another meaning of yet another meaning of the goy novel is the Chavraya. Now, who are they? So it's like this. The Gemara mentions them in a number of places in connection with the Persians. So there's one place where Rashi says that the Chavraya themselves are the Persians, but most of the Rashi himself elsewhere and most of the other Mephoshim explain that no, the Chavraya are a subgroup of the Persians. So specifically what it is that it comes out, the Aruch brings from the Marsha, brings from the Aruch, that they were the Persian priests. Now you had during the period of the Gemara. Nowadays Iran is Muslim, but back then before Islam came along, their national religion is called Zoroastrianism. They worshipped fire. They had a whole concept of two gods, a god of good and a god of evil. The Gemara mentions it sporadically here and there. Their priests, their galochim, were called Chavri. So we find in various places in the Gemara that they caused a lot of trouble to the Jews living under Persian rule, which includes the Jews above them. So they're the novel, they're the goy novel that we're saying again that they're acting in disgusting ways towards the Jewish people and towards Hashem. And therefore the goy novel Achisim then is Rabbi Yochanan is saying is referring to them that Hashem is going to put the Jewish people under their power. So, in fact, in that connection, the Gemara says, Omer le Rabbi Yochanan osu chavri lebavel. They told him, now Rabbi Yochanan lived his whole life in Eretz Yisrael, but they told him at one point, the chavri have come to Bavel. Historically, what happened was like this. During the time of there was the Persian Empire of Kodesh and Ahasuerus and Dariavesh that was conquered and defeated by Alexander the Great. Eventually the Persians managed to make themselves independent of that. They had a kingdom for a couple of hundred years over there. It's called the Parthian Empire. They had this religion of Zoroastrianism was their national religion, but they didn't make such a big deal about it. They were pretty tolerant. Now, in the time of Rabbi Yochanan, around the beginning of the time of the Amoraim, there was a revolution over there, and a new group came to power where the new king over there founded a new dynasty over there, was himself one of these Persian galochim, one of the Chavri. So therefore, for a while, there was serious trouble for the Jews of Bavel. So now Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael is being informed of what's going on in Bavel, that now the Chavri have taken over. They've taken over the government. Shoga Nafal. He bent over and he fell down. He felt sick. What's going to happen to the Jews above all, which is one of the major centers of Jewish life in the world nowadays? What's going to happen to them ruled over by the Chavri, who are very intolerant? But then they told Rabbi Yochanan, Makabli Sheikhta. These guys are corrupt. They're willing to accept bribes. Tritz Yosef, then he sat back up straight, and he realized in that case, then Jewish life will continue to be able to flourish in Babel. They're just they're going to have to grease some palms over there, but they're going to be able to continue to live without too much trouble. Kahava, for the most part. It's an old story, yeah. But for the most part, actually, I mean, this dynasty over there in history, it's called the Sasanian dynasty, ended up ruling Persia for about 400 years until the Muslims conquered it. And during most of those 400 years, it's true that the Jews got along fairly well over there. There was a period, Rav Shuda Goyen mentions in his Igeres and there's various other sources that mention that towards in the last 100 or 150 years, they started causing a lot of trouble for the Jews, and there were Shmudas and Xeris and whatnot. But overall, during the time of the Amoraim, for the most part, they got along well enough. There's actually a different girsa. The Magid Mishnah and the Rambam points out, the Rambam brings a halacha that when you have you have various things for which the Chachamim should declare fast and tefillah and extra tefillahs and things like that. And one of them is when a government comes into power, when a local government comes into an anti-Semitic local government comes into power. So the Magen Mishnah points out, apparently, that Rambam got that from our Gemara over here, and that it wouldn't be Rabbi Yochanan, who lived in Eretz Yisrael, who said this, but rather one of the Chachamim in Babel, that he's davening to Hashem to save the local Jews from the Chavri, and therefore we have a precedent for this concept that this is the kind of thing to declare fasts and things like that for.
Yeah, why it says in Perkei Avos, pray for the welfare of the government.
So there is something else, daven for the welfare of the government, even if it's anti-Semitic and whatever, because Ish Yisrael Chaim Bloy, but on the other hand, when such a government comes to power, then yeah, you have to daven and ask Hashem to be freed from it. Or that they should leave Malachim Besarim Biyad Hashem, or to have them like we have over here, where as long as they're willing to accept Shoichad, then you can manage to live under them. Yeah. So the Gemara continues. With three gzeres that these Chavri made in Bavel. Rashi seems to have the girsa. Rashi says Omru Lei. We don't have the words over here in front of us, but Omru Lei, they told Rabbi Yochanan that they continued to inform Rabbi Yochanan, here's the news from Bavel. The Chavri have taken over, and you should know they've declared the following three gzeres on the Jewish people in Bavel and in the Persian kingdom. So Gozru al Shloisha, they make Xeris on three things, and Rabbi Yochanan explains to them Mipnei Shloisha. The reason is because the Jews over there are being careless with three mitzvahs, and connected that, therefore the Eved Shteir is bringing these three Xeris to them. Gozru al Abosso, the first one they told them, they made a Xera that they're not allowed to shecht and eat animals. They're not allowed to eat meat. So he explains with Nam Matonis. The reason is because they're not giving the Matonis of Zroy Lachayai Vakeva that are supposed to be given to the Kohenim. So there is some discussion about that. You're going to say the Jews of Bavel, which includes many great Chachamim, they're not going to keep a mitzvah that it says right there in the Torah. So there's a couple of possibilities. The Oruch Haner and various other Mefoshim talk about, first of all, there's an opinion in a Gemara in Chulin that says that mitzvah doesn't apply outside Eretz Yisrael. Now that's not the halacha. The halacha is applies everywhere. But nevertheless, the Jews of Bavel may have been relying on the opinion that says that it doesn't apply in Bavel, but Rabbi Yochanan is holding that against them because why are you using a tatum like that and not doing the mitzvah? The fact is, by the way, nowadays also, you don't often see that people give Zroy L'Chayayim V'Keva to the Kohen. There are people who are working to strengthen the observance of the mitzvah. There are various things, there are various rationales that posts can give for why not to be so careful with it, but nevertheless, it's still better to do it.
Commercial
ones also have to do it. So there's the idea of the Kohenim Amoichol, and there's various other possibilities. We don't have any Kohenim Yuchosim, so we don't know for sure 100% that any particular Kohen is a Kohen, but these are all Heterim. They're. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan is saying that this is a problem with the Jews in Bavel. The second one, actually, the Chassam Sofer has a very interesting explanation about it. He says, doesn't just mean the matonis of Zroi L'Chayayim V'Keva. Like this, that's one of the 24 matonis that are given to Kohenim. And what's the idea? Is that the Kohenim are supposed to be the ones who teach Torah to the Jewish people. Yodom Ushpatech L'Yakov V'Sarosch L'Yisrael. And therefore, so they're supposed to be provided with their parnasa so that they're able to learn and teach Torah full time. Well, then, the Chassam Sofer says, so we don't just mean that in Bavel they weren't giving these matnas kohona, we mean that they weren't supporting the Talmud Chachamim. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, as a result of that, therefore, these Chavri are making a gzera against them that they can't eat meat. So the Chassam Sofer says, he says, you see it in our times as well. He mentions in his own time also, he says there were people weren't being careful enough to support the Talmud Chachamim, and sure enough, the government of his time, the government of Austria-Hungary, at one point also made a gzera against Shchita. So they go together.
Nowadays, Europe is awesome.
Yeah, nowadays in Europe, you also have, yeah, some, such zeros that have happened over and over in Jewish history, and Rabbi Yochanan is saying he was the underlying reason for it. The Aruch HaSholem, by the way, points out that based on what we know historically and religiously and whatever of the Zoroastrian beliefs, then we can understand from their point of view what they were thinking with these Zeros. They had an idea like all animal life is sacred and you shouldn't be killing unnecessarily, like PETA nowadays or whatever. But yeah, but Rabbi Yochanan is saying the real reason behind it is this reason that he's saying about the Matanis. The second one, Gozra HaMechatzos. They made a gzera there in Babel that the Jews can't use the bathhouses over there. So Rabbi Yochanan, they can't use the bathhouses.
Oh.
Yeah. So Rabbi Yochanan explains with Nat Vila. The reason is because they're not being careful with toiveling. Now, again, you're going to ask, the toiveling, a woman toivels once a month, the Chassar Shalom, to say that the Jews of Babel were being careless with that. So Maharshal says that maybe what it is in particular, you have the actual tevila itself, of course, they're being very careful with it. It's Issur Kares otherwise. But you have Midrabanan, you have to have before the tevila, there's Chafifa, where the woman has to shower and scrub her body thoroughly, and it has to be shortly before the tevila, and they weren't necessarily so careful with that to do it right before the tevila. So in return, there's Rabbi Yochanan is explaining that, in return, what the Eibishter did is that he caused that now they made a gzera against using the bathhouses, where those would be the places where the women would prepare for tevila. In other words, again, it's not that they're careless with the mitzvah of tevila itself, but yeah. The Aruch HaNer also mentions that another possibility is we're not talking about tevila of women, which is a mitzvah d'oraisa, but rather we're talking about tevilas Ezra, the famous takana that Ezra made that a balkeri should toivel in order to daven and in order to learn Torah. And the fact is, la halacha, that takana is not in effect anymore, and you're allowed to daven or learn Torah when you're a balkeri. Nevertheless, a bal nefesh is still supposed to be careful about it, and in Babel they weren't, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan is saying that the Eibishter is holding that against them.
Davening
Shmoneh Esrei. Yeah, primarily davening means Shmoneh Esrei, yeah. And the third one, by the way, as far as the Matanis, also Maharshal points out another way they could get around it, for example, Al Pi Halacha, if you have a goy as a partner with you in the ownership of the animal, then you're potter from Zroi L'Chayayim B'Keva. So that would be another way that they were using to do an end run around this mitzvah, but nevertheless Rabbi Yochanan is saying that's not the right thing to do. And the third gzera that the Chavri were making, komachatati shachri, they're unburying, they're digging up the dead. So here also, I mean, it's, you know, all, again, all these things can be understood in terms of their religion. They have the idea that the ground is sacred and bodies shouldn't be buried in it. They themselves would put their dead out on platforms, on high platforms for birds of prey to eat them. So like this, they're trying to enforce that on the Jews as well. And the reason is, the Gemara explains, because Jews there in Babel are rejoicing together with the Goyim on their Chagas. So now, as a result, it actually explains, so they're being happy with them on their Goyish holidays, and therefore the result is now there's this Zera, which plunges them into mourning again, because B'chlal, when a person's relative is dug up, you actually have a halacha called Likut Atzomos, that we talked about it a few days ago, that you have in those times, it was very common that you would bury a body temporarily until the flesh decayed, and then you would dig up the bones and you would put them and you'd bury them together with their ancestors in a niche in a cave or whatever. So here, like this one, the bodies are being there's supposed to be a one day avelos when that takes place. So now they're being plunged into avelos anytime that their relatives are being unburied or being dug up by the Chavri. And the reason is, we're saying, because they were inappropriately rejoicing together with the Goyim on their Chagas. So there's a variety of, again, there's a variety of explanations how they could be makel on that in Babel. Maharshal points out, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah mentions that outside Eretz Yisrael, the Goyim aren't really that addicted to their religion anyhow. They're not so fanatical about their religion anyway. When they have their Chagas, you think about it, like Lahavdil, you know, you think about it like nowadays at Xmas or something, they don't really think so much of the religious aspect of it. It's more like it's a nice fun day. So the Jews in Babel would also took that view of it, and therefore they figure it's not so bad to join with the Goyim in celebrating their Chagas, but nevertheless we're saying that it's the wrong thing to do. Then there's a number of other points as well. There's a point that they're being involved with the Goyim on their holidays, and including also the Goyim often bring Karbonis on their holidays, which the Karbonis are called Zivchei Mesim. They're sacrifices to the dead, and therefore in retribution for that, then their own dead get unburied. The chlal is the idea that any of that averus in general make a person spiritually dead. So therefore, so it overlays. Shenemar, as in fact the pasuk says, Shmuel warns the Jewish people that if you don't do what Hashem says, v'hoyse yad Hashem b'chem v'aviseichem, the hand of Hashem will be against you and against your ancestors. Now you can ask, you, it's impossible to understand. They're alive, and therefore Hashem could punish them in their lifetime. But v'aviseichem, the parents and the ancestors are already dead. How could Hashem strike them? V'omer Rava bar Shmuel zuchatur tishichvi. That refers to this kind of thing where they dig up the bodies of the dead. As in fact, the Gemara elsewhere says that because of the averus that the living people do, the dead people end up getting unburied in connection with that. And you have to ask, why is it? How could it be fair? So one answer is because the parents apparently didn't give a proper chinuch to their children, and therefore the children are not behaving the way they're supposed to, and therefore the parents end up having to go through this. And mind you, the Gemara says elsewhere, actually, that when a person's body is unburied, it's more of a kapara for him. So therefore, in that sense, and the parents and the ancestors to whom this is happening are having an ultimate kapara that way, at least. The Gemara, by the way, elsewhere mentions that you have technically in Beitza, I think it says, technically you have a din that if you have a mess on the second day of Yom Tov, on the first day of Yom Tov, you can only have goyim be involved with the burial. But if it's the second day of Yom Tov, technically you're allowed to have Jews do the burial. Nevertheless, the Gemara points out in Bavel they had to be careful about that because so Rashi over there explains that the reason is because if the goyim see Jews burying the dead on Yom Tov, they're going to force them to bury their own dead or to do other malachas for them on Yom Tov, and of course you're not going to be allowed to do that. But another explanation is based on this over here, that if the goyim see them bury the dead and on Yom Tov when everybody's out and about, then they're going to go and unbury them, and therefore so you have this danger that we're mentioning over here. So therefore they would have to do it. They'd have to do it privately. They'd have to do it in secrecy. So these were all, so we're saying, these are all the various zeres that these chavri were imposing in Bavel, and that was why Rabbi Yochanan was so nervous about what's going to happen to the Jewish community over there until he was told that they accept Shoichad, and then he realized, okay, at least we have a way out of this mess. So in this connection, the Gemara continues on that topic. Amalei Rava l'Rabba b'Amari. Siv, there's a pasuk that says, lo ye osu, the pasuk is talking about the Rishoyim towards the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, lo ye osu, they're going to die of hunger and of all kinds of other things, lo ye osu v'lo ye kaveru, they will not be gathered up, they won't be buried, l'doymin al pnei ha'adama yiyu, they will become like waste on the surface of the ground, in other words, because they're going to rot over there. Uchtiv, and the next pasuk continues, v'nivchar moves mechayim, death will be preferable to life. Now, you have to ask, if the people are not even going to be buried, then why would people prefer to die rather than to live? Now, the simple meaning, Marashah brings from Rashi over there, that it means that as bad as it's going to be for the Mesim that are going to be left unburied, the living are going to have it even worse. But the fact is, that's not mentioned in the Pasuk, so therefore the Gemara gives another explanation. So Rava is asking Rava bar Mori, what does the pasuk actually mean? We find all over Shas, by the way, where Rava bar Mori was apparently the great expert in Tanakh. So we often find that Rava and Rava and other Amoraim would ask him to explain the meanings of Pesukim in Tanakh. Anyway, so Omalei, he explains, Nivcha Mavis L'Rishoyim. What it means is, under such circumstances, we don't mean that people will choose, will say it's better to die than to live. What we mean is the Navi is saying, it's better, the Rishoyim are better off dying under such circumstances, Shalei Yichyu Ba'olam Hazeh, because otherwise if they continue living in this world, the Yechatu, they're going to continue sinning, the Yiplu B'Gehenim, and they're going to wind up in Gehenim, so therefore they're better off dying before that happens. I'll bet if, like we have, for example, with the Ben Sura Ramoda, where he's executed before he really goes bad, and you have other examples like that. So that's the Novi is not saying people are going to make that choice, but in other words, Hashem sometimes does a chesed like that for people who otherwise are going to become worse and worse Rishoyim and takes them away from the world, so this way they don't become so bad that they wind up in Gehenim. This way, after all, they're able to come to Olam Haba. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ula, Yud Ches Cheshvin. We started talking about yesterday about you have the various stages after Mashiach comes. We talked about yesterday, Yemos Mashiach, where the world is still going to, you have there's definitely going to be eating and drinking, but the question is going to be, the world is going to be functioning on Nisim, or is it the world is going to be functioning basically B'derech HaTeva, just that we're not going to be subject to the Goyim anymore. Now you have the second stage, Gan Eden. Gan Eden is where you have Neshamas without bodies. So there, obviously, there's no eating and drinking, because those are only relevant to bodies. Then you have the world of Tchias HaMesim. Now, then you have Tchias HaMesim, by definition, means Neshamas in bodies. Now, you have, famously, you have the Machloikas between the Rambam and the Ramban about that. What happens after Tchias HaMesim? The Rambam learns that eventually, even after Tchias HaMesim, everybody's going to die, and there's going to be a world of only Neshamas. The Ramban disagrees on that and says that the people who come alive by Tchias HaMesim are going to continue living forever in Gufim, but the Gufim are going to be on a much higher level, and Chassid Al-Tadabah and Torah are writes according to that, and in general, Chassidus agrees with that. So now, when you have neshamas in bodies, then when Chazal say that ha'olam haba doesn't, that in olam haba there's no eating and drinking, so that of necessity has to be so, and it's saying there's no eating and drinking, so that's talking about the ultimate degree of schar. That is talking about the world after tchias hamesim. So there's going to be bodies, but they're not going to need to eat because they're going to be sustained by pure elikus. Okay. We start in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and Simon Peches talking about the dinim of Mukta. And Mukta is pretty complicated stuff, but we have only two fairly short simonim on the subject, but there's a lot of detail packed into them. So first of all, you have what's called the first kind of one. There's several different categories of Mukta. One is called Mukta Midas. So you have, for example, food that you put out of mind before Shabbos because it's not edible, because it's only barely edible. It could be because it's completely inedible. It could be because it's only barely edible. You would only eat it in a pinch. It could be even that it's fine. It's edible, but you have it set aside. You plan to sell it. So all those kinds of things. So most of these kinds of things, you are still allowed to handle them on Shabbos. You have what's called docha b'yadayim, where you push them away b'yadayim. The classic example in Shas is, for example, grapes that you put out to dry into raisins, where until they turn into raisins, they're not really edible. So then those would be mukta on Shabbos. But other than that, most of these other kinds of things, even you stored it away and you plan to sell it, or it's only barely edible. I shouldn't say where it's not edible at all. It's barely edible, or things like that, or things that you could feed to animals, even if you didn't plan to before Shabbos. Or things, for example, that it was in one state yesterday, but it became a different state today. For example, you have, let's say, a keli that broke on Shabbos, but you could still sort of use it for the original purpose. So it's not completely unusable. The Al Tadeba actually adds, even if they're only usable for some other malacha, as long as they're usable in some sense. Another example would be bones, for example, that were separated from the meat, and you could give them to dogs. So all these kinds of things you would be allowed to handle on Shabbos, even though on the face of it, you put them out of mind. You don't plan to eat them on Shabbos. Nevertheless, they're not mukta, and you are allowed to handle them. Again, unless dechoy be a dime, unless you actually did something with them to make them that you're not going to do anything with them on Shabbos. For example, these grapes that you put out to make raisins.
About frozen raw meat.
So frozen raw meat. So, I mean, you can't cook raw meat on Shabbos, obviously, but you could feed it to animals. So therefore, there would possibly be reason to be able to handle it on Shabbos. So, even so, if it's frozen, I mean, all it has to do is defrost. You don't have to really do much with it. I'll have to look it up for sure, but I think there may be grounds based on what we're saying over here that it might be grounds to be able to handle it on Shabbos. I'll look it up though, Linetta.